Hello, hello. Welcome to Squabbles of the Soil, Season 4, a podcast produced in collaboration with MTSU Collegiate FFA Chapter and directed by students of the MTSU Debate and Discussions in Agriculture class. The opinions stated on this podcast are not affiliated with MTSU. The dirt of the day here consists of controversial agricultural topics. Let's come down to earth.
Hey guys, my name is Addison Medlin. I am a plant and soil science major and agriculture education minor at Middle Tennessee State University. Today's topic is going to be about the Roundup of wild horses. Throughout the last several years, wild horses that roam freely on public land have become overpopulated to the point of conflict. Due to the overpopulation, these horses are recruited and removed from the land using the method of roundup or gather by law of the Bureau of Land Management. Some people disagree with removing wild horses from the land, and others stand in support of doing it, while some disapprove of the methods being practiced. This podcast will explore the controversy behind the removal and roundup of wild horses in the Western United States. Our first guest today is Celeste Carlisle from Return to Freedom Wild Horse Preservation. Celeste is a biologist for the Return to Freedom American Wild Horse Sanctuary in California and also sits as the chair of the Department of Interior's Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board. Thank you, Celeste, for joining this episode of the podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what your background is in this topic?
My background is I'm a biologist and have always worked in the sciences and have a biology degree and did tons of, field biology and science education. First about marine mammals and then about marine invertebrates. And then had always just had and loved horses and realized that you could actually go to college for horses. I didn't know that. And so I went back to school for a second degree in my 30s and got an animal science degree with the equine option and just really enjoyed the science of horses, exercise physiology, nutrition, habitat requirements in, more natural settings for horses around the world. I just thought that was all really interesting, but I didn't have an agenda. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking to do anything in particular. And I didn't even know that we had, just sort of in the back of my head, wild horses, but I didn't know anything else. I didn't know where they were. I didn't know if we had them or didn't have them. Nothing. And so it was just an accident that I got into the sort of wild horse issue. And it was because we were moving back to an area of California that happens to have this wild horse sanctuary and advocacy organization called Return to Freedom. And a friend of a friend who knew the place had said, oh, you're moving back to that area with your brand new equine science degree. You should contact them. That was literally all of the background that I had. So when I got into this sort of issue, my knowledge about it came from that place, an advocacy organization that was worried about the way that wild horses were managed on our public lands. So that's a sort of background and context that I had. And I had the very typical, the federal agencies don't care and they're doing a bad job mm-hmm. and everyone is fighting and ranchers are mean. That I'm being very stereotypical. And that's not that my organization was teaching, like, you have to think that way. It's just that those were the kinds of messages that I was receiving from just staying within that group. Speaking to advocates that were interested in wild horses. But I've been doing this now for 20 years, and I've been doing a lot of other things too, alongside or at the same time. And utilizing the scientific background that I have, and more of the, well, biology is my background, but certainly with an appreciation of ecology, that's not really a fair way to think about those animals on those public lands, that there are a lot of other things to consider.
Yes.
So that's sort of the, and to consider them from that standpoint of ecology. So mm-hmm. public lands, regardless of what we as individuals believe about them or believe they exist for, what they do exist for and they are mandated for, and the policies and laws that sort of enable these public lands to be in existence also demand that there are these multiple uses that we manage for on those lands. And that is the part that's tricky, because it's essentially asking of these lands something that might be impossible. Mm-hmm. Because what I think is appropriate uses are not going to be the same as what you think or your friend thinks or your friend's friend or your neighbor or the, you know, whoever. We all think differently about that. So that means that all of us are going to come from our different angles of, you know, if my belief is that that land is for wild horses, well, then I'm going to be a little grumpy about cattle and sheep that might, you know, in my mind, be taking away from some of those AUMs that grazing is contingent upon on those public lands. And similarly, if you are a cattle rancher and you're thinking, hey, I'm allocated this amount of feed and these amount of cattle, but there are so many horses or, you know, fill in the blank, other usages, they're impinging upon my ability to even utilize the amount that I've supposedly been granted. So, you know, thinking about that for every different special use on those public lands, you can see that those special uses are going to be protective of their own use or what they feel is most important or what they interpret as this land was set aside for. Mm-hmm. So essentially it sets us all up for arguing.
Yeah. And how does Return to Freedom specifically relate to this topic?
Well, Return to Freedom has always been concerned about that we have put ourselves into a situation where these gathers continue to happen. You know, for example, if you're going to have as part of your management sort of paradigm that when, in this case, horses are above what you think is an appropriate level of horses for that area, and then your management plan essentially is, well, when they're above that number, we will gather back down to, you know, within that range of acceptable numbers of horses for whatever that habitat is. We haven't really solved the issue. You've just said, okay, right now, today, we've removed X number of animals, so good, we're at a good number now. Well, you turn around and walk away from that area, and those horses are immediately repopulating that range. So Return to Freedom has always been, I would guess, bummed is a good word, that this is not a good way. Whenever you do a gather, it is traumatic for those animals. I mean, I don't mean to say that in that something spectacularly gruesome occurs every time, but it is. They live in very, you know, established social groups, family bands first, and then their sort of larger herd around them. And those interactions and sort of social cohesion between those horses is pretty complex. We don't understand it completely, but we know that it exists, and there are these bonds that sort of, you know, help with all kinds of things, fitness and survival and their own sort of health and well-being, however you want to think about that. And then we essentially damage that whenever there's a gather. We're going to be removing some number of horses from that system. Mm-hmm. And then we're also, you know, removing them from this sort of free roaming behaviors that they get to have, which is, you know, pretty core to horses. And so that all just doesn't feel good. You know, ideally, it would be great to do a better job of managing them on the range, as opposed to that management needing to include things like removing large numbers of them and then fretting about what sort of holding they're going to go into, and having to do adoption programs, which are a huge amount of administrative oversight for, you know, when you look at it as just a numbers game, it's not a huge number of animals that you can do that for. So it's just to us, it's very crazy making. It's this circular logic of, mm-hmm. There's too many, we'll remove them down, we'll put them into holding. Well, hey, guess what? Now we have too many in holding and too many on the range. So it's just this self-perpetuating management challenge. And so ideally, Return to Freedom doesn't want any roundups. But we also are very aware that that's an idealized situation that at this point in time, because of the numbers of horses that are on the range and the numbers that are in holding and the very real changes to those habitats where horses have historically been managed. So climate change is causing these already fragile ecosystems that they live in to become more resource limited and more fragile. And so, you know, in our heart of hearts, we don't want any of them gathered because of those reasons. It's difficult on them. It's difficult to maintain that system. It's, you know, separating these family groups that they're really reliant upon. All of that is, you know, that's not something to strive for. Mm-hmm. But we're also very committed to the idea that to get to that point, to get to a point where we can do a good job managing on healthy landscapes and not gathering horses as part of a management regime, unfortunately, there has to be a compromise of our sorts of ideals to reach that point. And that confuses people. That makes our supporters get nervous and say things like, oh, you guys just support gatherers. Well, you know, we don't support them. We don't want them. But if we want to get to a point where we are primarily managing horses on the range, hopefully with methodologies that are less invasive, like fertility control, then unfortunately, that system has to be put in place at the same time. In other words, as you're doing gather and removals, you are scaling up fertility control. And then you reach a point, if you're doing that, where you begin to reduce the number of gathers that you're doing, and you're beginning to reduce their frequency and the number of animals that need to be removed. Until you reach a point where fertility control has sort of caught up with whatever those, you know, management mandates are for these different ranges. And again, we don't make these happen. They are in existence and they have to be worked within. Even if they're wrong, you work within them as you are changing this sort of overarching structures around management of all of these things. All of the uses that we do on public lands are likely going to compromise over the foreseeable future because of climate change. And to say that, oh gosh, horses are not a part of that is irresponsible. I mean, mm-hmm. They have to be a part of it. They are other users out on that landscape. And everyone might disagree about you know, who gets the fairer usage of those resources? But that argument is sort of always going to be present.
What effects do these roundups or gatherings have on these horses?
I think they are, you know, I come from I'm a pretty stoic person and I don't get worked up about stuff, but I do think they're really, me personally, and I would say advocacy organizations in general, I think they're really hard on those kinship and social behaviors that family bands in particular rely upon. So I think those bonds are broken, essentially. Either horses are left behind, but some grouping of their organization, you know, maybe it's the lead mare, maybe it's the alpha stallion, maybe it's the kind of anti-caretaker, you know, mare who has sort of babysitting duties, for lack of a better term, but some amount of loss from that group and the roles that those horses have is going to occur. So whoever's left behind has to essentially reorganize, which, you know, I think some would argue big deal, but you know, it is a big deal. Those are thinking, sentient, you know, creatures that's going to be difficult. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they die, but everything changes for them. And then for horses that are gathered, of course, they're separated completely. You know, all the males and females are separated and the males are all gelded. And, you know, it's just it's a removal of their, you know, free roaming, you know, livelihoods, essentially. And that sucks. I mean, even not from a sort of touchy-feely sort of place, but, you know, I've watched horses that just lose a buddy, either through death or the buddy is, you know, sent off to live somewhere else. And they're different after that buddy leaves. They're definitely sad. And so I think that we do have these effects on these animals that I think that sort of in the domesticated horse kind of world that we primarily live in, we can make excuses for and feel okay about. But I think it is a disservice to those animals. And another reason to work towards, you know, real on-range management applications where we're not having to do that sort of thing forever and ever.
Well, I have one last question for you. What do you believe the listeners should take away from this main controversy?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's definitely not as simplified as you would see on anyone's website or on certainly anyone's social media. And the layering and complexity is, and the real concerns are really worth understanding, and you know, roll up your sleeves and get involved in a positive manner.
Well, thank you so much for joining me for this episode and providing so much insight for the listeners.
Good deal.
Our second guest is Lene Rogers from the Bureau of Land Management. Lene is the active state wild horse and burro manager in Colorado, as well as a rangeland management specialist for the BLM. Thank you, Lene, for joining me. What is your experience with wild horses and or the gathering and roundup of them?
Okay, well, I'm going to start out with the first part of that. What is your experience with wild horses? And I'm just going to say, you know, BLM, including myself, manage wild horses in their habitat in herd management areas or herd areas that were designated in the Act in 1971. And they're located on the western part of the United States. I did want to emphasize a little bit on their habitat, because sometimes these horses in the habitat kind of get out of balance. And that's when we see the need to remove some of those animals so that we can maintain that habitat where these animals reside. With that, I'll go on to the second part of that question, which is my experience in the removal and gathering of them. And my experience starts from the very beginning, you know, when we're starting that planning process with the National Environmental Policy Act, to being actually on the gather, from hauling horses to a holding facility, being a contracting officer's representative at the holding facility before we move them to a bigger facility, or actually the contracting officer or the contracting officer's representative over the gather. So it really runs a gamut of responsibilities.
Did you say that you have been at those holding facilities?
I have. So when we gather the horses, they go to a very short-term holding before we truck them to our larger holding facilities. And yes, I have been at those.
And what's your experience with that? Do you enjoy doing that? Is it sort of a difficult job, or?
I do enjoy that. And, you know, you get to see the horses come in, you get to see their personalities, you get to see the different colors, how they interact with one another. Mm-hmm. And at that time also, you get to look at those horses and say, you know what, this horse may need a little extra care, so they may go into more of what I call our tender loving care pen, so that we can have our APHIS vet, because we always have an APHIS veterinarian there. And so we have those horses, you know, a little more TLC. So it really is getting to meet the horses, you know, for the first time up close and looking at their different personalities and how they interact. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, very cool. My second question is, how does the BLM specifically relate to this topic? Which you touched on that a little bit, but.
Well, BLM has a lot of public lands. And, you know, we are a multiple-use agency. And we manage, you know, recreation, grazing, oil and gas, you know. And in that, we manage for healthy horses on healthy rangelands. And that's really important. And so just to throw one thing out there that I kind of find as a fun fact is, you know, wild horses don't have any natural predators that help keep that population in balance, kind of like deer and elk and mm-hmm. some of our other wildlife do. So their population can grow 15 to 20% a year, which is a doubling in size, bird size, within 5 years. So you can kind of relate to what that would do to a habitat or the base of habitat if we didn't have any removals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you mind describing your personal thoughts and opinions on the method of removal of wild horses?
So in the past, BLM's tried many different ways to gather horses, from, you know, on horseback and, you know, kind of chasing and herding them into an area, to on foot. So there's been many ways, you know, that we've done that. But really, through the years, what we have found as the safest and most efficient gather method is actually our drive traps, which actually do use a helicopter for our larger roundups. Now, if you're looking at, you know, very few horses that you're having to take off, you know, your smaller bait traps definitely work for those well. And there has been some scientific data on that, showing that our gather traps are actually, our drive traps, which are done with helicopter, are actually really safe. And if you look in like the Journal of Equine Veterinary Science, John Skafsta out of Wyoming did a study that actually put together and looked at a decade of data that actually showed drive traps, you know, are normally safer than our smaller bait traps. And that is actually within the range of other gathers when they're looking at gathering wildlife species for studies, deer, elk, any of that. So, you know, if you want any additional information on that, I definitely take a read and look that journal up.
Yeah. Okay. Do you feel there's any improvement to be made with these methods?
I believe there can always be improvements to anything, to how we do things in life, whether it's, you know, your teenager driving for the first time, you know, or, you know, how you go about something. And I think BLM is no different there, you know, and we've employed some methods, and, you know, we use what's called our comprehensive animal welfare program, which is pretty in-depth, scientifically based, to improve the process in gathers and also to address the stressors of the animals. You know, we're constantly looking for ways to improve on that. And one way, you know, it doesn't have to deal directly with gathers, but indirectly, we're looking at fertility control methods, which would actually, if we get those up and running and we, you know, we get to where we need to be, they would actually help reduce the number of gathers or the number of horses needing gathered, while still promoting healthy horses on healthy rangelands for for public view, photography, and just to enjoy. So I think, you know, I think there's always room for improvement in anything we do, and BLM's no different.
Yeah, yeah. Could you tell me a little bit more about the fertility control methods, what that process is kind of like? I personally don't know anything about that, so.
So right now, we use fertility control, and the control that we're looking at that we actually use on the range right now are vaccines that actually work like birth control.
Okay.
And there's two types that we use. One's called PZP and the other's called Gonacon. And they both have independent pathways on how those vaccines work. And I would suggest you just look that up if you want to, you know, find anything more about how that actually works. That would be great. But what that does is it defers an egg being fertilized for anywhere from a year to 4 years, depending on which vaccine you use, which helps us to manage, you know, the size of the herd, helps us manage the range. And then, of course, going into those gather situations, it can increase our length of time between gathers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my next question is, how does the overpopulation of wild horses affect American agriculture?
So I'm going to go back to saying, you know, BLM is definitely a multiple-use agency.
Mm-hmm.
And one use always impacts another use, whether it's in a positive or a negative manner. So if we go back to thinking about, okay, you have a horse herd that is multiplying, you know, in size every 5 years, you know, you're going to see a decrease in the health of the rangeland as a forage base, which increases the cost of agriculture, not only at the local level, but, you know, all the way to the grocery store and the dinner plate.
What are the most prevalent difficulties involving wild horse management?
So, believe it or not, it's actually not managing the horses. It's actually the misinformation that's out there. There's a lot of it. And because of that, you know, people need to do their own research, and they need to look at both sides of the coin, and what points to a very strong based science, decisions, and just don't believe everything, you know, that's on social media, you know, or for that matter, don't believe everything that BLM says, you know, do your own research, look at the current science and data that's out there. And there's been a lot of it out there. You know, if you look at the Journal of Applied Animal Behavior, Ransom, you know, he has a lot of information out there. The Journal of Veterinary Behavior, Wildlife Research Journals, the PLOS with Baker, Rangeland Ecology with Frey. You know, there is general information on the BLM.gov Wild Horse and Burro website that has a lot of information about our HMAs, you know, our herd management areas out west, the size of them, the number of them, the adoption process, and so much more. So I guess the biggest takeaway I would say is, you know, don't always believe everything you hear. Don't believe, you know, everything you see on social media. Get out there and dive into some of the research yourself, so that you can make a very informed decision about where you stand.
Yeah, absolutely. To wrap up, we'd like to thank you, the listener, for taking time to listen to this episode of Squabbles of the Soil. Now, we hope that you are able to form your own opinion on the roundup of wild horses and how the topic affects and or relates to the wide world of agriculture. Just keep digging.
Thank you for joining us on another insightful episode of Squabbles of the Soil. We hope you've enjoyed digging deep into the pressing issues facing our agricultural world. Keep listening and find out who you are rooting for.